This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Tracks on the Line, Trek FM show in which we record audio commentary for every episode of Star Trek Picard. I'm Mike.
And I'm Max.
And today we're going to be taking a look at Star Trek Picard Season 1, Episode 5, Stardust City Rag.
Stardust City Rag.
Which I'm not exactly sure what it's referring to. I mean, rag would imply newspaper, right?
Yeah, or like a tabloidy or less than respected newspaper.
I don't get it. Whatever. Doesn't matter. So, okay, it's Saturday morning, 10:27 a.m.
Sure.
The episode has been out for 56 hours and 27 minutes.
Yes.
So how many times have you seen it?
I'm not sure. I think it's 6.
Okay. This episode, Stardust City Rag, halfway through.
I'm not delighted about that.
Well, you know, it'll be back on. I mean, maybe they'll pull a Harley Quinn. You know, they just had the finale yesterday, and then they announced, oh, season 2 starts April 2nd. So maybe they'll do that.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. I'm kind of hoping they do that with at least Discovery Season 3, but we'll see. Well, should we just get into this thing?
Yeah, let's get into it, man.
Okay, so we're starting up approximately 8 seconds in on the CBS All Access version, just after the CBS All Access logo. If you have a different logo, just go past that. And if you're ready, we will start it up in 3, 2, 1. Start.
Yeah. Previously
on Star Trek Picard.
Yep. Got Aggie and JL, B4, all the characters.
Yeah.
It's all happening.
Mm-hmm. Allison Pill, she has a lot to do in this episode, which is kind of cool. There's a couple of main characters who are not in this. They don't go to the Borg cube at all in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. That was an interesting choice.
Mm-hmm. I'm okay with it. It's just interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it broke with the format just like that tiny little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But we're going to get to see a lot of familiar faces in this one. Well, not really familiar faces, but characters who we have seen before.
We're going to see a familiar face and some familiar characters.
Yeah. You know, here they're showing the thing where they're like, beam him up. This pilot is great. He's amazing. And then it's 709. Yeah. They do the same thing in this episode. It's weird.
Yeah, I mean, it's hundreds of years in the future, and we've still got these gender assumptions and biases in place.
Yeah.
It's kind of a bummer.
So here's Icheb.
Yep.
Getting an eyeball removed.
Let's get into this. This was controversial.
Yeah, was it really controversial? I mean, I guess I don't think it was controversial. I think it was just, you know, whatever. Yeah,
Like the one thing like I heard was like, oh my God, I can't believe that they did this incredibly gross thing. I mean, I didn't really think it was super graphic, like, because like it's not like an organic eyeball; it's like a Borg eye. I mean,
it's whenever I think, I mean, for me personally, any time there's something involving an eyeball, I freak out. But right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's an interesting choice. I mean, I will say, you know, for all, it's really strange, like how much sort of like talk there was over the idea of Tarantino doing a Star Trek movie and making it R-rated and people saying like, do you need that? You know, whatever. And it's like with this show repeatedly, they've just been like, whatever, we're doing it. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people have said much about it, but I think it kind of like puts that argument to rest. Not that he's doing a Star Trek movie anymore, but whatever.
They basically killed Icheb while looking for his cortical node, and he doesn't even have one.
Oh, he doesn't have one?
Yeah, remember they did an episode of Voyager about Seven's cortical node failing, and he was like, I can give her mine, and they're like, no, that's too dangerous, and then he like took his out without telling anyone, and was like, look, I'm fine.
I mean, if I'm going to be completely honest, I never remember that that character exists until I see him on screen. But, you know, I mean, that must have been intentional, right? I mean,
yeah.
So this episode, it was written by Kirsten Beyer, who has, I mean, until now anyway, her, you know, big claim to fame in the world of Star Trek is that she wrote the post-Endgame Voyager novels, right?
Yep.
So she knows these Voyager characters better than anyone. So she had to have known that and done that intentionally, which I think is a very interesting choice that I didn't know about until 30 seconds ago.
Okay.
I mean, there has been criticism for that, you know, the idea of, well, you know, killing a character in order to motivate another character, certainly.
Oh, yeah, they totally fridged Icheb for sure. Like,
yeah.
That's absolutely what happened.
Mm-hmm. Hey, everybody. Mike here, just butting into this conversation that I'm having with Max to clear up a couple of points which we have already made in this here commentary track. Originally, there was a minute-long gap in this little section because of something else that we were talking about, which we didn't know anything about. So I figured that I would use that time to talk about a couple of other things which we didn't know anything about earlier in the conversation, which were pointed out to us online. One thing is that Stardust City Rag refers to a song, not a newspaper, rag being a song. Still don't understand how it applies to this episode, but at least now we know what they're talking about. Secondly, the conversation which we were just having about fridging Icheb, this doesn't count as fridging because fridging very specifically refers to killing a woman in order to motivate a male character. I can still see how killing Icheb is a problem, but it does not qualify as fridging. Just wanted to clear up those two points. Thanks to everyone for their comments, and enjoy the rest of the commentary. Oh, but they're just killing old characters left and right here, right? I mean, Maddox isn't dying in this particular moment, but he will be dead by the end of this episode. Spoilers.
Oh, my wife could not get over how much Bajazel is dressed like Britney Spears in the Toxic video.
I hadn't thought about it, but I knew there was a reason why I like that character, I guess. I don't know.
Like, once she pointed it out, I'm like, oh, yeah, she does look exactly like that, but with shoulder pads.
Yeah. So this opening credit sequence, one of the things which I noticed, which is also present on the Discovery opening credit sequence, is like, film dirt, like little speckles of film dirt. It's just an interesting choice that they decided to make. And I don't exactly know why, because nothing about it suggests film except for the film dirt.
I'm not sure it's necessarily film dirt. I mean, you can have like grainy effects in other medium.
No. The way that it plays, it's clearly supposed to be film dirt. It looks just like film dirt. What they need is some film guard.
Okay. All right.
That is the most inside joke you'll ever hear.
Yeah, it's so inside. Like, basically, I got it.
Uh-huh.
And you heard my reaction.
Someone somewhere will hear this and be like, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
That's how they'll say it.
Yeah.
They'll say it. That's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yep. So we're going to Free Cloud.
Yeah, Free Cloud.
Yeah.
The first city outside of the laws and cultural norms of the Federation.
But first we are meeting the new Seven. So I don't know. There was that other podcast thing, the official podcast thing, and they had Jeri Ryan on it, and she said something really interesting, which was that she read the script for this and she freaked out because she couldn't find Seven's voice.
Yep.
And she said that, you know, as we all know, Seven has a very particular way of speaking, but the reason for that, or one of the reasons for that, is that almost all of her dialogue was either written or rewritten by Brandon Braga.
Uh-huh.
That's really interesting. I mean, he wasn't even the showrunner for, you know, a couple of those seasons. And I mean, obviously he created the character and stuff like that, but I just find it fascinating that that's the case. I mean, it makes sense, you know, kind of like James Gunn rewriting all the Guardians dialogue for the Avengers movies, you know, but it's just, I found that to be fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And, you know, I mean, here's the scene, you know, where she says, like, what the hell are you doing out here, Picard? And that line is the first line we heard Seven say in the trailer. And as soon as she said it, I was like, wow, this character has changed, you know? And I mean, I think it's kind of interesting to see that, to deal with that change and why she changed and all that stuff. It's really interesting. I don't know. The stuff they're doing with this character is pretty cool. And I hope that we see a lot more of her. And honestly, like, I want to see a Fenris Rangers show, you know? Go, go, Fenris Rangers.
No, no, no. Hold on. I'm going to give you some silence so that you can cut that out.
You know, I've never actually seen an episode of Power Rangers.
Okay.
So I win.
Okay.
I think. I don't know.
I like this conversation that they have where they're like, these people that are on the ship that are kind of well known, and like, they're both just sort of like putting the pieces together of stuff that they are already aware of.
Yeah.
It's weird.
No, it's cool.
Rios is like, oh, I forgot he was Borg.
Yeah. No. But I mean, it's really kind of smart too, because for one thing, it's answering a lot of questions that longtime fans have. Like, so did they meet? Do they know each other? What's the deal? But at the same time, it's also giving new viewers all of that information that they need in, I think, an effective way. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. There's so many times where you'll see a scene like that, or a scene that does what that scene is doing. And as a new viewer, or as a long time viewer, you're like, oh my God, this is so clunky. But here, I think it works perfectly well because they are the new viewers, right? Like, they're literally the people who on the show are being dropped into this thing, and none of them have seen Voyager or Next Generation. Well, I think Raffi's probably seen a little bit of Next Generation, but she hasn't seen the whole thing. She skipped over seasons 1 and 2.
Well, I mean,
because people told her they were bad.
Yeah.
She probably watched Measure of a Man, though. You know, extended cut.
Maybe.
Yeah. And so when Maddox shows up, she's like, "Who's this guy?" Because it doesn't look like, anyway.
He does look a lot like the original guy. Like, he looks like an older version of the guy from Measure of a Man.
Yeah, no, it's weird, though. Like, the guy from Measure of a Man, like, I looked him up. You know, apparently he's retired and he's teaching now or something like that. But I looked him up, and he has been acting up until fairly recently. And he's been in a number of stuffs. And, like, I saw a picture of him today, and I'm like, oh, it's that guy, you know? So, and he doesn't look like anything like this dude. So, you know, but...
No,
he also doesn't look anything like...
This dude looks like an older version of the original appearance of the guy.
He also doesn't look anything like he looked in Measure of a Man, so... But, no.
Some people age laterally.
Yeah. So... but it is kind of disappointing that they didn't get him back. Totally cool with them recasting Egypt, though. So, you know.
Sometimes you got to recast. These things happen.
Yeah. So here we're entering the Freak Cloud thing. I like all of their little pop-up ads, you know. Like, that's what it's like now.
I guess, but I'm surprised that Rios doesn't have a pop-up blocker installed. Like, that seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Like, if the pop-ups take the form of, like, interfering, distracting holograms, I would be blocking those.
Yeah.
I like that Elnor seems legitimately disappointed that he didn't get one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's new for him. All of this stuff is new for him. I mean, I would be disappointed if I didn't get one, even though... You know, if I were them, I'd be like,
I didn't get a hologram. I wish I had got a hologram and it had been a cat.
Right. But, like, if you lived in that world, if you were Rios and the hologram popped up, you'd be like, get out, you know? But for us who've never had a hologram, I want a hologram. Anyway.
Yeah.
So this is all kind of convenient, right? I mean, like... The person who has the guy that they're looking for also happens to be the person who killed the guy who she considers to be like a son, and they just both all happen to be, you know, it's not like she was looking for this guy, right?
I don't know. I think that there's, like, you can argue it's convenient, but I think that there's an argument to be made for, like, the concept of like the filtering effects of exceptionalism, like, because Seven of Nine is kind of exceptional. Picard is kind of exceptional. Seven of Nine's actions have been historically exceptional. That she managed to save Icheb was exceptional. So his existence was exceptional, but Jaezal is exceptionally, like, mischievous, devious, and cruel and evil. So all of these exceptional things, because they have things in common already, being connected and interacting, and the exceptionally evil and cruel person being responsible for an evil and cruel action committed on somebody else in this particular circle of exceptionalism, doesn't seem implausible at all.
So what about when you had that establishing shot, which has both Quark's bar and Mr. Mott's hair emporium? Like,
what
I just,
about it?
I mean, it's also like just another coincidental thing that just happens to be showing up. You know, it's like I can just imagine, like, Picard beaming in there and being like, ah, Mr. Mott, he used to be my barber. And they're like, wait, what? You know,
I'll tell you why I don't have a problem with that. Because I get the same ads over and over and over again on Google.
Uh-huh.
I get the same ads in my feed on my phone. I get the same like pop-ups on YouTube. I get targeted advertising based on my search history, my browsing history, things I've bought on Amazon.
Okay.
So that they're getting targeted advertising for what they have tangential connections to seems totally reasonable.
All right. I buy that. I guess I was thinking more of those being like the establishments, you know, themselves.
I think they are establishments, but I also think that those are popping up specifically for us.
No. But I mean, I thought like they beamed in front of a building that was Quark's Bar, and right next to it was Mr. Mott's Hair Emporium.
No, I don't think so.
And here they're dropping Quark's name again, which this I don't have a problem with because it sounds like they talk to Quark. And I do get the impression that, you know, Picard went to Quark and he's like, hey, Quark. You know, like they probably have met. I mean, certainly Quark knows Riker and, you know, Picard's been to, and he's like, hey, Quark, do me this solid. We need the word of someone who is corrupt. Could you help us out? And Quark's
like, I like to imagine that at some point in the past, you know, 20 years, like since we've seen them on a regular basis, that O'Brien was like, if you ever need a hookup in like the underbelly of the crime world,
right,
call Quark. He's got connections, but he's also okay.
Yeah.
So you can rely on him.
Right. I mean, something like that happened, or Worf did that or something, you know, something along those lines. So I actually like the Quark.
Worf would not recommend Quark for anything.
No. Yeah, you're probably right. But I like the Quark name drop here. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. But I have a hard time with these guns.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't love the look of those guns.
All right. But they always say such nice things about you. No.
What was that?
I don't know, you know, just criticizing these guns and,
okay. I want you to think about what you've just done.
All right. Oh. Yeah, so this alien reptile guy.
Yeah, he's I don't know, like I don't know if I'm supposed to find him creepy or funny.
Probably both, the way that this episode is structured. I mean, it's kind of a surprise that they would go with such a sort of a lighter, humorous tone. I mean, as we see this scene right here, I mean, I love it. I think it, but I also think on a meta level, it does explain why Patrick Stewart didn't use a French accent when playing Picard, you know? But also, like, what does it say?
Or like some over-the-top, like, French supervillain doing a Werner Herzog impression
kind of voice. I was going to say the same freaking thing. Patrick Stewart channeling his inner Werner Herzog, like, with a French accent, though.
Like, yeah, it's a French supervillain. He's doing a character. The character is a French supervillain doing a Werner Herzog impression.
Yeah. It sounds like, I mean, yeah, I don't know, all those things melding together. But also it's like, I mean, like Picard is like, here, let me pull out my French accent. Right? Like, what's that about?
Yes.
I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense. It's perfect.
I mean, it's weird. You have to imagine that there's some weird history with the French language and the English accent, and it's probably very complicated and maybe involves a war. It's weird. I feel bad that Elnor didn't get to be a character.
Yeah. Well, baby steps, you know?
Yeah.
He does get to wear a cool jacket. He's going to be in Chicago next week, along with Soji.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. They really are just going over the top with this, which is great, you know, and you got to figure, I mean, certainly it's in the writing, but you got to figure Frakes pushed that even further, right? I mean, like, I can't see, like, a first-time director coming in with Patrick Stewart and being like, okay, here's what you're going to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know how sometimes you do silly voices and it makes people laugh? Do that for this character that your character is playing. Because your character believes that these people are stupid.
I just love the, I mean, the whole thing here. You know, I mean, like, Seven says it on screen. She's like, he needs a feather in his hat. You know, and they're like, let's give Picard an eye patch. Why not? You know, it's like it's like someone, you know, went through their closet to find last minute Halloween costumes, you know, like that's the aesthetic they're going for. Totally works. So this is a weird little deviation, I guess. Raffi going to find her son.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
Things do not go well.
No.
It's sad.
Yep.
But on the plus side, she's still, you know, with the crew and on the ship, so, you know, she'll be around to do stuff. So, I mean, her, like, tremendous personal tragedy is a win-win for us.
I mean, it's one of those things which is kind of like awkwardly structured in the show where it's like, well, we know this isn't going to work out like prior to the scene even occurring because we know that she's still on the show. And also, it's just kind of weird. She's like, let me just go to this doctor's office to meet him. You know, like, what? Like, I'm just going to pop into this doctor's office. Like, I don't, it's just a strange choice. Like, why? Okay. And this guy, he's the guy from Booksmart, the vice president of student council who, you know, the president has a crush on, even though she's, you know, despises him for being just like a dumb.
Oh, that's what I know him from.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew I recognized him.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I was like, I don't think I like this guy. I wonder why. He probably played somebody unlikable.
Well, he was likable. He just, you know.
No, he wasn't.
Okay. Yeah, if you haven't seen Booksmart, it's the best movie of last year. I think it's on Hulu right now. Check it out.
Okay.
It's fantastic.
Okay.
I am, like, there's a lot of great movies out there, which I'm not surprised you don't like. Or which I think you wouldn't like. But I am absolutely shocked that you do not like Booksmart. Completely shocked.
Okay.
Yeah. Seems like
I didn't hate it.
Seems like it would be right up your alley. I mean, when I saw that, I was like, I think I texted you. I'm like, Max, you have to see Booksmart.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, this guy's good in Booksmart. Check it out.
Yeah. It is somewhat surprising that now that he is a parent, he has a hard time letting his mother back in. Like, that's the thing that I find weird.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it seems like the wounds are pretty fresh, right? But it is interesting that we're getting some backstory into the idea that she is perceived as like a conspiracy theorist sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think it's going to be, I mean, we haven't really gotten into that conspiracy, but I think what we're going to end up finding is that she's right, right?
All conspiracy theorists are crazy. Even the ones who are right.
There you go. That explains you.
I don't know. I don't think I'm a conspiracy theorist.
Okay. That's because you're crazy.
I think I'm a conspiracy enthusiast. I don't really believe in any of them. I just think, yeah, that'd be cool. I'm going to go with that one.
Oh, 7 of 9. Uh-oh. Now it's all about to go down.
Yeah, like, it's all about to go down for a long time before it does happen. It's weird.
Oh, there's a lot of backstory that we need to get through, I guess, right?
Yeah, it's just like, everybody thinks that, like, they have everyone else where they want them.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's just sort of standing there like, I wonder when I should, like, unleash my trap.
Yeah.
And then eventually somebody does, and then it still happens for another several minutes.
No, I mean, I like that Elnor line where he's like, are we still pretending? And then Picard looks at Seven and is like, no, we're all done pretending now. Aren't we, Seven? You know, it works. And she seems really concerned about operating this transporter, which, I mean, I can understand because it seems to be pretty high mortality rate with these things. But at the same time, it doesn't seem like there's much to it, right?
I don't think that she's concerned about operating the transporter. I think she's concerned about the whole thing, and she does not want to have to kill anyone.
Well, yeah, that too. But I mean, she's
kind of hoping that Maddox dies on the surface.
But when she does successfully transport them up, she's like, oh my God, I can't believe I actually did that, you know?
Yeah. I don't think it was, you know, the moving the dials on the thing that was weighing on her.
I don't know. I mean, like, she seems genuine with, you know, like, because obviously people have been talking about there's something up with her ever since she showed up at Picard's house. And while I can totally understand that, at the same time, she seems genuine in all of her appearances, right? Whatever the situation is.
No, I mean, I've been saying, like, yeah, obviously there's something up with her, but I don't think she's a bad guy. Mm-hmm. I think that she's a good guy. She's just got more going on than is initially apparent.
Yeah, and as we're seeing in this episode, she's been tricked. Well, maybe we'll see if she's been tricked. Maybe there legitimately is a thing that whatever. But
it is always possible that, like, these devious synth-killing Romulans are really onto something.
Uh-huh.
And Soji is some sort of, you know, prophesized villain that will destroy everything.
I mean, like, I guess to me the question more is, like, are the Romulans, you know, because she's like, I wish they wouldn't have showed me that stuff, you know? I wish they wouldn't have told me what they told me. And I guess the question is, did they tell her things that were actually, like, did Commodore O go to her and be like, look, here's the deal, and lay it all out for real? Or did they trick her? Did they lie to her in order to get her to do what they want her to do?
I think that knowing who she is and her intelligence, they would probably avoid lying to her because she might be able to confirm that it was untrue. And then they would not only have played some information into a potential enemy, but given them critical information that could use against them. So I think that when they told her stuff, they told her absolute truth.
But it could also be a situation where that absolute truth isn't accurate or something.
Sure. No, they might be trying to be 100% honest and tell her the truth of the situation and still be misinterpreting something.
Yeah.
But, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
I'm trying not to speculate on the future of the show.
Yeah. It's always best to not do that, I think. You know? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing flashbacks again to this Icheb death scene. And, you know, I mean, we were talking about this last week. It's like, oh, is the occasional F-bomb more offensive than some of this stuff? And regardless of whether or not it is, regardless of whatever, I will say that when I was watching this with my wife and, you know, that scene came up, even though there were no F-bombs on screen, I still heard repeated F-bombs during that scene. Because my wife was like, oh, F, oh, F, oh, F. What the F are they doing? I'm trying to effing eat here. This is effing disgusting.
Why don't we just say freak?
There you go.
It sounds a lot better than F.
Freak is the new frack or frick.
I've been trying to make it happen.
I'm on board.
This is a weird thing where, like, he's like, let them go so that there's not a price on their heads for being part of this murder that you want to do. And then they let them go. And then, like, immediately afterwards, she's like, all right, they're good. They're not involved anymore, even though they gave me these guns and sent me right here.
it's a lot less, you know, I mean, they're not there. They're not.
No, they're, you know, not directly present for the crime. They just gave her the weapons and delivered her to the site.
But is it that, I mean, is that going to be the case? Or because to me, it's like, because they're not talking about the law, right? They're talking about...
No, I mean, I just find it funny that Rios makes this point. Yeah. And she's like, all right, I agree with you, but your point is wrong. I'm not doing this to keep them safe, because I'm immediately going to do something that is going to put them in jeopardy.
Yeah.
I am just going to let them go so that they think... that there is still a chance for mercy.
Maybe. I mean, do you think... I mean, this scene is obviously, you know, great because it's a very unique conversation. And these two Star Trek icons who are from different corners of the Star Trek universe, you know, sort of like having a discussion that is unique to their individual characters, right? I mean, like, that's super cool, right? I guess my question, which is unrelated to any of that, is do you think that Picard knows what she's about to go to do?
Yes.
Okay, I think so too. So this scene,
I don't think that he knows exactly what she's going to do. I think he knows that she's going to go, you know, cause a ruckus and take out Bajazel.
Yeah.
I don't think that he realizes that she's going to take out Bajazel and then just hang around and shoot her way through all of the guards and security.
I mean, it sounds like something Picard would do, right? I mean, we just saw him in the last episode where he's like, let me mess with these Romulans here, right?
Yeah, but he had 7 minutes.
Yeah.
And he had 7 free minutes in which he could do anything. If you have 7 minutes before you get transported up to a spaceship, yeah, you'll rob a Dairy Queen.
And you know? And only one guy died, and he was upset about that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
This scene...
He wasn't planning on that guy dying. That came out of nowhere.
Yeah. This scene, I mean, the situation, but also how it plays, and even how it's shot, is very Showdown at the House of Blue Leaves. Which I'm 100% on board with, but yeah, I can't think that that was a coincidence. There's too much, too many similarities.
Well, that was also referencing a lot of these sorts of noirish films in which these sorts of things occur.
Sure.
So there's shared DNA around the board.
Yeah. And here we have Maddox. He's okay. It's all good. It's so weird because, well, like...
He's not great. he's got lots of injuries.
Mm-hmm. Maddox...
Even if Aggie didn't do anything, he still could have died.
Yeah. Maddox is a really interesting character to sort of wrap your head around when you're thinking about him in relation to the rest of Star Trek, because like the one time that we saw him up until like the end of the final act, like he's the antagonist and he's a pretty terrible guy. And yet even there, he like begins to find redemption. And even though we don't see him, we are aware that he has changed his ways, right?
Well, like, I mean, I know that, like, when I watched Measure of a Man more recently in the past few years, like, my reading has always been, like, I guess ever since this, Data and him have been basically emailing.
Well, there's a whole episode. Isn't that who he's emailing in Data's day?
I think it is, but, like, presumably this is a regular occurrence.
Yeah.
He's communicating with this guy on a regular basis.
Yeah, they become friends.
Maddox is... I mean, I guess. I mean, it's weird. Maddox has, like, such a weird relationship with Data, and Data has such a weird relationship with everyone. Like, I guess they are basically friends. It's just very interesting to imagine that this has been going on for all this time. And you also have to imagine that all over this period, Maddox has to be, like, he's so weird, but basically is just a guy. Like... Data's a really weird person, but he is a person. And I mean, like, that's what we have to assume happened because it's unavoidable. Like, when you spend enough time with him, you're like, yeah, I guess he is just like a completely unique sort of regular, ordinary person.
Yeah, but like, also, Data, like, could see, you know, like, Data, I think, more than most people can see the potential in people. He can see the good in them, you know, because he doesn't hold grudges, right?
I also think he doesn't really care about the bad in them. He's just like, yeah, you're wrong about a lot of things, but I don't think that your wrongness is necessarily harmful as long as it's controlled. So let's chat.
Well, but also, like, you know, everyone on the ship is like, oh my God, this Maddox guy is a total jerk, right? And Data's like, I don't agree with him wanting to control my life. I can't let him do that.
I'd prefer not to be cut to pieces.
Right.
That'd be soup's great to not have that happen.
Right. And he'd be like, hey, Data, can we talk? And he's like, sure. And he's like, so you're cool with me doing this? And Data's like, no. You know? But if he turns,
he's like, "Come on,
yeah,
let me cut you up."
Right, but then, like, if he turns around and says, "Like, okay, so you're not cool with me disassembling you, but would you want to watch some Pinky in the Brain?" Data would be like, "Sure, let's do that."
I could do a lot of other things while we're doing that. It's cool. I got a lot of stuff going on, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just interesting. And I think, like, you know, the flip side of that is by doing that, by Maddox being like, can we continue to talk so that I can learn from you? And Data saying, sure. I think what he learns is that Data's pretty cool and that I shouldn't be doing what... And he's like, I'm the jerk. I'm the jerk. Data taught me that I'm the jerk. And now he's not. And now,
yeah, I think he learned that he was the jerk, like, in season 4.
Yeah.
Like, very early on, he was like, oh, yeah. I made some bad assumptions and some bad choices, but I'm gonna not do that anymore. So, like, by this point, like, his jerky ways are so far in the past. It's,
oh yeah, he hasn't been a jerk.
It's totally different.
He hasn't been a jerk since like season 3 of Next Gen. You know, yeah. That was like when his last jerky impulses. I mean, now he's all cool, you know. So, but now he's dead. Or he's about to be dead. So,
he was great, and then he was dead.
He died. Yeah, you know, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, in the world of Trek novels, they call David Mack the Angel of Death because he kills everybody in his books. But I think that Kirsten Beyer is trying to take that title in the television world, because here she comes in and she's like, let me kill Icheb and Maddox. I'm done, you know? So yeah, good for her, I guess. Allison Pill in that scene, I mean, you could see how, like, she's like, I have to do this, and yet I cannot believe that I'm doing this. I mean, she's already killed, what, 2 people at least since she started on this thing? Prior to this, she hadn't killed anyone, you know? That's a lot to deal with. I'm assuming right now you're watching something about next week's episode. I haven't seen it. I don't know.
I sure am.
It's interesting.
I'm watching Picard and Soji climbing through ventilation shafts. Oh,
spoilers. So
I made that up.
Okay. So, I mean, one of the interesting things in these credits is, you know, they talk about the music, and I did hear, like, there was talk, which, I mean, was interesting, I guess, for the final scene in the last episode. There was a music cue which was edited in the show because of dialogue, but when you listen to it on the soundtrack, people were saying that you could hear a couple of notes from the Voyager theme as when Seven appears. And I listened to it and I'm like, I mean, yeah, it's there, but like, I almost wonder if that was just like a random thing of like 3 notes which happened to be the same, that, you know, and the composer Jeff Russo seemed to imply online that he had intended that. But regardless of that, I noticed the second time through on this one that when she's beaming down to the surface, you can totally hear the Voyager theme when she beams down. But in the credits here, you know, it says, like, you know, I think they do this rather frequently, like, theme from Star Trek the Motion Picture composed by Jerry Goldsmith, because, you know, they obviously use that throughout the music rather frequently and in the opening credits. But it also says Lullaby Number 2 by Jay Chataway. And I'm assuming, because Jay Chataway worked on, you know, Next Gen era Trek, I'm assuming that there is a piece of music from either Next Gen or Voyager which appears somewhere in this episode, but I honestly could not tell you what it is. Can you?
Well, you heard it here. Mike says that's interesting, I guess.
Did you hear it?
I hear little flavors of themes throughout the show.
Yeah.
And I don't, it just seems appropriate. I didn't really think much about it. I was like, that's a good choice. That makes sense. That is in keeping with the way this show is handling its music. I suppose I have a very analytical approach to the way the music is handled on the show. I just think, yes, they did that correctly. Good job, Picard.
Have you been listening to the soundtrack or not?
No, I have not.
Okay. I think it's the, you know what I think it is? It's the Inner Light theme.
The Resican flute piece?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, should we wrap this up?
Sure.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on Picard, and the best place to do that is in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook, where we'll collect your feedback for postcards on the line. You can also find us on Twitter at TrekFM or send us an email using the contact form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and choose the line. Max, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm at JMax Hagel on the Twitter, and we're on that podcast, Film Damage.
FilmDamagePod.com, where you can hear us talk all about our experiences with Film Guard.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, we tied it back, connected it all up from the opening credits to now.
You can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K and also Letterboxd if you want to see all the movies which I've been watching, like Booksmart. And I haven't really been watching. I've been watching TV. I've been watching so much TV lately. I haven't seen
it's great.
A movie since I can't even remember the last movie that I watched.
You got to check out that Letterboxing. It's like you go under a thing and you say a movie that you watched, and then you give that movie a numerical value.
No, you don't have to do
and
that.
And you do that again and again.
No. You don't have to do that. You can see, I want you to be on Letterboxd just because I want to keep tabs on what you're watching. But like, if you don't want to review movies on there, you don't have to. I mean, I would like to see your star rating just so I can get a good barometer for like where you're falling on the, you know, just so I'd give
like literally everything but like five movies one star.
Okay, you know, maybe you should start watching some better movies. But like, I just want to, you know I want to have an idea so that I can be like, what? You didn't like Birds of Prey? I don't understand. I
haven't seen it.
What's wrong with you? I'm just, that's a hypothetical situation.
Okay.
Go see Birds of Prey.
I haven't seen it.
It's awesome. You'd love it. Okay. Get on Letterboxd, Max. I need to see what you're watching. My point.
Not going to do that. I was on Letterboxd and I was like, this is the worst. I hate doing this.
Oh, it's great. I
hate keeping track of what I've watched.
It's so great. So easy. Anyway, we'd also like to thank our associate producer, Norman C. Lau. Thank you very much for your support. And if you'd like to keep all of our shows going and even become an associate producer yourself, visit patreon.com/trekfm for all the details. All right. Stardust City Rag is in the books.
It is. The books are in there. It's in them. In the thing.
Five down, five to go. Five down, five to go.
It's hard.
So until next time, the line must be drawn where?
Apparently before you cut each Hebb's eye out.